are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. And you are with Patricia Traina. I am your host. And joining me for this particular show is Chris Bizziano of the Giant Insider. And we are going to talk about Dave Gettleman's press conference that he held on Wednesday, January 2nd, and just kind of talk about some of the things that were said, some of the things that were maybe inferred a little bit, and just, you know, try and take a temperature as to where this team is and where it's going. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. As always, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on, Patty. And how are you doing? That was quite a conference today, huh?
Yes, it was. It ran about a little over a half hour. Yeah. And as people can probably guess, the hot topic was not Odell Beckham Jr. It was actually Eli Manning. I mean, Chris, if I had told you this at the start of the year or maybe 2 years ago that Eli Manning would dominate a news conference, would you have believed me?
No. Not at all. Matter of fact, Odell, I believe, was mentioned 1 minute today. Somebody asked about him, right? And he was like, we just signed him, we're not trading him. And everybody moved on.
Exactly. I thought that was kind of funny myself. But Dave Gettleman asked a lot of questions, and as we figured he would be, about Eli Manning. And Chris, what stood out to you today about what Dave had to say about Eli? Anything in particular?
What stood out to me, Patty, is that he is leaving the door open for next season. That, not saying he's not coming back, Eli, but the possibility that he will not be the quarterback is in play. That's the impression I got, Pat. Still likes him, still thinks he could do it all. You know, he still thinks he could make the throws. He still thinks he could be effective. But when he mentioned a few times about brutal honesty and, you know, they had a long talk and they discussed a lot of things, the impression I got is that, yes, Eli, you are our quarterback, but it's not 100%. How about you, Pat? That's the impression I got.
I think you're right on that, Chris. That's the impression I got, but I'm going to kind of add another layer to it if I could. I've been saying now for several weeks that the impression I've been getting with Eli Manning is if he decides not to retire, he will be back as the Giants quarterback. So Gettleman did not go into details about what he and Eli discussed, right. But I got to, you know, just talking from a human perspective here, watching Eli go through this season, and let's be real, it's been a rough season. You know, the media scrutiny, the fan scrutiny, and even though Eli says he doesn't read it, I can't believe that he's not immune to it. Gotta wonder how much that's been affecting him. And, you know, it's interesting because Dave said that Eli initiated the conversation, that he came up to his office and wanted to talk. Right. So I wonder, and I have, you know, obviously this is just me kind of trying to piece it together logically. I wonder if maybe Eli just had to get some stuff off his chest, you know, because everything kind of, if you will, ganged up on him, if, you know, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, Patty, I think that's a fair assessment. I think Eli's been beat down by the media, you know, the last few months. The basic sentiment around, you know, around everything is that, hey, Eli's got to go. Eli's the problem. Eli can't do it anymore. Eli stinks. Eli's this. Eli's that. You know, listen, Eli's not a social media guy, but if you don't think for 1 second that he doesn't know what's going on around him as far as what people say about him, what media, the basic, you know, the theme of the media is, you know, you're just fooling yourself. You know he knows what's going on around him. Okay. He might not have a Twitter account. He might not know every tweet that's going out, Pat, but he knows what's going on around him. So I think Eli's been beat down a little bit by this media, as far as him, you know, has to go. They have to move in another direction. And like every human being, Patty, I think it's affected him. And I think he reached out to Gettleman and wants to know exactly, you know, what's going on, what are you guys thinking, and all that. The guy deserves that right, Pat. He's here 15 years, a couple of Super Bowls, and he probably wanted to know what his future was, Patty.
Absolutely, and that's a fair question. And you know, look, Eli went and did an interview, a radio interview with Mike Francesa on the Fan afterwards, and he sounded like a guy who still wants to play, still wants to come back. But, you know, he also kind of left the door open a little bit. And here's the thing, Chris. They're what, a couple days removed now from the end of the season? Yeah. Emotions are running high now. You know, you just said goodbye to all your teammates. You don't know who's going to be back. You don't know if you're going to be back. Emotions are running high. So to expect anybody to kind of come up with a definite decision at this stage of the game, I mean, take a couple weeks away, think things through, clear your head, and see where you're at that point. And then maybe, you know, by then Gettleman has done his evaluation. He's spoken to the coaches and the personnel people, and they, you know, they have a better handle on the draft and the pro personnel and all that good stuff. And then everybody can kind of make a decision as to which direction they're going.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's plenty of time now for decisions like that. You know, Gettleman expressed that today. Now he's going to start looking at film. And I think the expression used, his eyeballs are going to bleed from looking at so much film. They're going to assess every play. You know, I asked him about OV and Janoris, and he basically said, I want to look at them more, and I'm going to assess them more. We move on, evaluate them and all that. So what they do, Pat, is now him and Sharma, they look at every play of the season, literally. Literally. They look at every play, every throw we like made and coverages and what he might have missed, what he connected, what he looked good, all that. And they're going to come to a conclusion, Pat. And like you said, it's going to, you know, give it a few weeks, give it a month. Nothing's going on in February except for some, you know, franchise designations, and the Super Bowl wraps up beginning of the month. And there's plenty of time for that. Like you said, let's everything calm down. They'll evaluate Eli what they want. And then I'm sure he'll be the first to know if they do decide to make a move, Pat, which we don't even know, right? We don't even know where they're at right now. So that's where we're at. Like you said, everything calmed down. The season ended Sunday. The media has been pretty hard on Eli at times. And now it's just time to cool off and let's see what the offseason brings.
Exactly. And, you know, I've been saying this, you know, for several weeks now, that I think the scenario, that the way it's going to play out, is Eli will be the starting quarterback, assuming he doesn't retire. That's the wild card that nobody knows about. I mean, right now, only Eli knows how he might be leaning there. But I think Eli will come back. I think he will finish out his contract. My guess is at some point, he may even have a conversation with John Mara about, you know, where things stand and where things are going. But here's the other thing. You know, Eli on the radio today said that, look, you know, it's been very different my career since 2013. And that's when his offensive line basically deteriorated and he basically had a run around. And plus, don't forget, he lost Kevin Gilbride, under whom he flourished. Right. So it's funny because, you know, people say, well, why is Eli making these stupid throws and dumb decisions? This is what he did under Kevin Gilbride. He was a gunslinger. And Gilbride and the Giants back then could live with the occasional mistake. Okay? I mean, and it's just, it's a different, you know, offense. I get it. It's different times. But this is exactly how Eli played when he was in his quote-unquote prime.
Yeah. And that's Eli. I mean, that's Eli. This is the guy that we've known since 2004. I mean, he's going to wing it and he's going to, you know, throw some interceptions where you scratch your head. But this has been Eli, right, Pat? And this is not a surprise. You know, this is the way he is.
Exactly.
Listen. We kind of talked about this, Patty, too. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Gettleman brings somebody in for a little competition with Eli, okay? Mm-hmm. Either be, I don't know, a free agent, a bridge guy, whatever it might be. You know, Eli hasn't had any competition, Pat, right, since he's been here.
Right.
So let's see if Gettleman, maybe he talked about that. I mean, hey, Eli, we're going to bring somebody in. We don't know who it is yet, but we want a little competition at every position, including yours. He might have said that for all we know.
And
right?
There's nothing wrong with that either.
And there's nothing wrong with that, Pat. I mean, he hasn't had that his whole career, right? I mean, he could have went out, winged three, four interceptions a game, which we've seen, right? I mean, it has happened with Eli. And Eli knew, hey, I'm going to be the quarterback next week. So maybe Gettleman told him, hey, Eli, we're going to get some competition in here. Not saying it's not your job, but, you know, we're going to have somebody behind you and all that coming next training camp. All right? That's not the worst thing, right, Pat?
No, not at all. Yeah, and what I think could very well be, I mean, this is the scenario I think, especially now that Daniel Jones has declared. I mean, I don't know, you know, as we record this, Dwayne Haskins, I don't believe, has made a decision, but I don't think it's going to be Haskins anyhow, because Haskins is probably going to go early in the first round. And if I'm the Giants, I get a pass rusher, and I don't think twice about it. But what I do try and do with the quarterback is I try and use some of my draft capital to maybe trade back up into the first round. And if Daniel Jones is still sitting there, then I see if I don't, if I can't, you know, get a clean shot at him and grab him for you know, a guy to develop, you know, and this way you can at least see if that's your transition plan. But I do think they're going to add another young quarterback. I mean, Pat Shurmur has spoken in the past about how he likes to add young quarterbacks and develop them. So I would not, you know, I'd be surprised if they don't.
Yeah, Patty, you know what? I think it's, I don't know what Gettleman and Shurmur are thinking as far as, especially Gettleman, you know, he's going to pull the trigger on draft night. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know. Like he said today, he's going to look at all this film of these kids coming out, and then they decide, Pat, to what I think might be a pretty good prospect in the bottom half of the first round, he might think it is not. You know what I mean? What I would think that, you know, I wouldn't draft Haskins with a sixth overall pick. Gettleman might fall in love with him, Patty, between now and April, you know? It's a tough call. It all depends on what Gettleman sees and what he doesn't see. Like, we all kind of know he wasn't crazy about the last draft class, right, of quarterbacks. Other people were, you know. So that's going to be up to Gettleman, Pat. Personally, Patty, you know how I feel about this. I want an offense. I have shifted that thought. I now want edge rusher, defense, linebackers. That's what I want in this draft, Pat.
And we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but I would be absolutely shocked. You know, people say to me, well, if it's such a deep class, why don't you just wait? Well, you could wait, but this defense needs more than one edge rusher. They need more than one linebacker. They need help on the defensive line. You know, Gettleman talked about all this. We were talking about the statistic today, Chris, how the Giants in the NFC East scored the most points, but they also gave up the most points on defense. So if that doesn't scream out what direction they're going in, and when they start rebuilding this roster, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I think Gettleman made that known today too. You know, that second half of the season, except for the Tennessee game, offense wasn't a problem, Pat. You know, defense is what cost the Giants, you know, late in games is what cost, that's what gave them losses. You know, that's why they lost games, was because of the defense. So you see where Gettleman talked today. He's going after defense. There's no question about it. All right. He recognizes that one of the main reasons we were 5-11 is because the defense couldn't get stops. Yeah, we scored points and all that, but then you turn around and you see who gave up the most points in the division. And that was the Giants. So, Pat, there's no question Gettleman is going to make the defense the focal point of this draft.
No doubt about it. Chris, we're going to take a short break, come back, and we'll discuss some other things Dave Gettleman had to say during his year-end press conference. So folks, do stay with us. Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Chris Biziano of the Giant Insider. And we're breaking down Dave Gettleman's year-end press conference. The topic, of course, the hot topic was Eli Manning and his status. So we just spent segment one talking about that. But let's turn our attention to some of the other things Gettleman had to say. And, you know, Chris, you know, you obviously have the transcript. You were there. You heard everything. Yeah. What else jumped out at you and made you say,
Well, the first thing we just talked about, Eli reached out to him. That definitely made me go, that was interesting. I guess, you know, reading between the lines, defense is definitely a concern of Gettleman's. So I was happy to see that. It looks like to me he's going to, you know, go after, you know, to show up the D. Other than that, he was, you know, pretty much, you know, back and forth, you know, not ditching and weaving. I hate to say that, but, you know, he was kind of, you know, he didn't want to talk about any contracts. The Odell thing came out. He says, hey, we just signed him. He's not getting traded. So I wasn't really an moment, but, you know, I was kind of glad maybe he put that to rest because, you know, that's going to be flying around this whole season left and right.
Sure.
Other than that, Loletta, the Loletta thing he talked about, yeah, he's a young kid. He made a mistake. He didn't mention about, yeah, he made a mistake with the police and all that, but, he was running late a few times in practices. I was curious if he found that concern. So that was kind of like, he basically just threw that off as, he's a young kid. He blamed it because everybody makes mistakes, which he's right, Pat. Everybody does make mistakes. I thought maybe he'll get a little bit more into that with the Loletta thing. He didn't. I'm trying to get anything else, but that's about it, Pat. Anything else he was, talking about, the fans that, he has a good thing. So, you know what, Pat, he threw his total support behind Shermer. He feels he's 100% the right man for the job. And he feels confident in the future, Pat. Nothing else I could think of that really took me back.
Okay. A couple of things that I know, I wouldn't say took me back. It just kind of validated stuff that I had written earlier when it had happened. He spoke about the team heading in the right direction, and he mentioned rebuilding the culture. And he had also mentioned that part of the reason why he brought in Jonathan Stewart and Patrick Omame, two guys really didn't contribute, I guess as they had hoped they would, was because they were professionals in the leadership. So right. I found that to be pretty interesting. But the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting was when, and I forget who it was that asked the question, but somebody said, hey, you missed, aren't you sorry that you misjudged, and I'm paraphrasing here, but that you misjudged the capability of this team. And Gettleman basically said, how did I misjudge them? I knew what they were all about. What was I going to do? Basically sit there and say, oh, this is going to be a losing effort. So I found that to be interesting right. as well, that he would come out there and, set the record straight there. So, we mentioned the Odell thing and Kyle Walletta.
Hey, Patty, I have to ask you, he did mention that about Omame and Stewart. What did you feel about that? I mean, he basically gave a guy, basically the impression I got today is that he gave Jonathan Stewart a two-year deal. What was it, $4 million, $5 million, whatever it was. I don't remember the exact number now. Because he's a locker room leader. I mean, that's basically what he was saying today, right? Mm-hmm. And Omame, he felt he could play, but he brought him in for the leadership. I got to be honest with you, Pat. Don't get me wrong. I understand the culture he wanted to change and all that. But I was a little – I totally forgot about that, Pat. I'm glad you mentioned it. I was a little like, whoa, it's a nice little hit, money-wise, a little bit of a cap hit. Not a lot, but a little bit for a guy that you consider basically in here to be a leader, right? I don't know if I agree with that move. I understand where he's coming from, Gettleman, but I was a little like, whoa. And I thought he would say, hey, listen, we thought this guy had some ball left, and he does, but he got injured and all that. He basically said, yeah, we brought him in because, a guy like Stewart's a leader.
Yeah, my reaction, and I think I tweeted this, I said, I had no problem with them bringing those guys in.
Right.
What I had the problem with was the money that they spent on them. I'm like, you mean to tell me you couldn't have gotten Jonathan Stewart on a one-year veteran minimum deal? I mean, I understand what they were doing with Omame because they really thought that he was going to be a guy that, maybe could step in there until they found another answer at that right guard spot. But, you look at the money that was spent and the dead money cap hit that they're going to face – And you say to yourself, that's money down the drain.
Right, Pat. That was the issue I had was, like you said, we couldn't get him a little cheaper to be a leader, I don't know if Gettleman was spinning that a little bit, thinking, hey, this guy's still got a couple years left. He's going to be effective for us. And then he turned out he really wasn't. So now he kind of twisted it to like, well, we brought him in here, the mentor Saquon and turn the culture around a little bit. I don't know, but I thought it was a little bit of an expensive move, Pat. I'm talking Jonathan Stewart here. Not Omame slated in as right guard. They had him penciled in. They thought he could be an effective right guard. It turned out he wasn't, okay? But Stewart, he basically brought him in just to kind of like bring that professional attitude to the locker room. And I thought that was a little strange, Pat. I have to be honest, because of the money they gave him.
Right, because of the money, but it's interesting because Saquon, how many times did he talk about how he was picking Jonathan Stewart's mind about how to stay healthy, how to go through recovery? And I'll tell you something, Chris. During Baggy Day or Boxing Day, whatever you want to call it, I even witnessed and I was talking with Wayne Gallman, and Wayne Gallman had a game ball, and you know, he wasn't sure what he was going to do, and he was, I think he was joking. He's like, "Oh, I think I'm going to give it away." And Jonathan Stewart was at his locker, which was a couple stalls down from Gallman's, and said, "Don't you dare give that ball away. You never know when you're going to get another one." And he was even imparting, you know, wisdom there on something as simple as a game ball. And you know, you can just imagine, based, you know, maybe other things, maybe that Stewart witnessed in the locker room, where right. maybe he went up to a guy and tried, and not just his running backs, but anybody, any young Everybody. Player, just yeah. going up to them and just kind of, you know, saying, "Hey, look, this is how it should be done."
Yeah, no question, Pat. Listen, Jonathan Stewart's a well-respected veteran. I mean, I just had a little bit of an issue, Patty. Me personally, I'm not saying I'm right, Pat. I'm just saying, he got kind of a, you know, a little bit more money than I thought he should have got for that role. Like you said, I think I would have liked to see him like the vet minimum, you know, that kind of cap hit instead of the one he got, just to basically come in and be like a leader. You know, to me, it was a little bit too much money. But, you know, let's listen, I'll move on. That just, you know, that took me back a little bit when he said that in the presser today.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm trying to see if I can get the number, but I don't think they're going to get hit with too big of a cap hit
right.
if they move on from Jonathan Stewart this year. This year being 2019. I'm trying to find his number real quick. Let me see. Here it is. If they cut him, they're going to get hit with $250,000 dead money.
Right.
Drop in the bucket. Okay,
right,
but meanwhile, they save $2.525 million. Okay, and basically, Stewart has at least from what I've observed, he's done his job, because if he was brought in here primarily to get Saquon Barkley on the right, straight and narrow, not that Saquon needed it, but I think I would say Jonathan Stewart, whatever influence he's had on Saquon Barkley, you can see it, because this kid definitely has his head screwed on straight.
Yes, I mean, no question. I'm sure he has helped out Saquon immensely. Anything from, you know, recovery periods after games, taking care of your body during the season, how to speak to the media and all that. You know, and I'm sure it's not just Barkley he helped. I'm sure it's receivers, you know, any veteran. It could have been BJ Hill. You know, all these young kids that came into the league, Pat. You know, yep. Stewart's been through the mill. You know, he knows the ins and outs of everything in this mm-hmm. league, you know. So it's not just the running backs. I'm sure he's helped out plenty of kids in that locker room, the young kids in that locker room. So, yeah, listen, he did what Gettleman expected, Pat. No question about it.
Mm-hmm. And Gettleman, of course, spoke about, you know, look, we had to grow away from 3-13. We had to fix the culture. And Gettleman said it. He said we didn't have the, you know, the shenanigans that were going on last year. You know, guys weren't quitting. He talked about how, you know, during the bye week when they were 1-7, witnessing the practices and how they were practicing as though they were 7-1. And that all bodes well for the future. I know it doesn't put wins in your pocket, but mm-hmm. it bodes well for the future, I think.
Absolutely. You know, listen, you know, Sherman has turned this locker room around. These players have bought into the program. Now we just have to upgrade the talent, Pat. And Coach Sherman has to fine tune a little bit with his management skills during the game, in-game management. No question about it. I mean, prime example, Pat, you know, the last game, they're on their 47, 49, whatever it was, and Coach Sherman's calling 4 straight passes. With 2 timeouts and 1:10 left, whatever it was. All you need is like 20 yards and in Rosas' field goal range. You know, so little things like that, Sherman, you listen, you know, he could improve like that, okay? No question about it. There's some things that he could improve on in-game managing. But off the field, practicing, respect from the players, hard working, all that, Pat Sherman gets an A. I'm sorry, Pat. He gets an A. And turning the culture around on his team, players playing hard right to the last snap of the Cowboy game. Everybody believing in his system, Pat. And I don't think there's any question about that. Gettleman expressed that today. The organization feels they have the right man. Now, if that turns into more wins next year, Pat, that's what the organization is hoping, because another 5-11 year, especially if Eli's back, then that seat's going to get a little warmer on the Pat Sherman's, you know what.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Chris, let's take our final break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the defense. So, folks, do stay with us.
Hey, Giant fans. Bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs this weekend and all season long at DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. How huge? We're talking over $1.5 million in total prizes. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play. Because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup in the line. And you can play free with your first deposit to compete for your share of over $1.5 million in total prizes. Go to DraftKings.com or download the app today. Use the code LOCKEDON to enter a contest for free this weekend with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $1.5 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON, only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Chris Bisciano of the Giant Insider. Chris has been joining me a lot since Ed Valentine left me, so I do appreciate you coming on. I always love talking football with you, Chris. I mean, whether we're doing it on the podcast or in the press room or in the press box.
It seems like we've been talking a lot of football a lot, right?
We have.
In the media room, on podcasts, in the parking lot.
I know. And Chris, you know, I want to start this segment off because you mentioned earlier in the program about a question you brought up about Janoris Jenkins and OV, Gettleman basically said, you know, they're going to look at things, you know, they're going to let everything calm down and not make any decisions based on emotion. What did you take away from that response?
I didn't take anything away from it, Pat. I was hoping he would talk about the cap maybe a little bit, and you know, maybe not everybody's gonna be back because we have to, you know, get some cap space, whatever it might be. But he just, you know, basically said that I have to look at the film answer again. I hate to use the word surprise, Patty, but I don't think OV is gonna be back because that cap hit is just gonna be too much, Pat. Jenkins is another guy. I mean, but here's the thing, Pat. Like we talked about this before, like. You can't replace everybody, you know? So if you get rid of a Jenkins, I mean, that's a pretty good corner there, Pat. Now you just removed, you know? But the other end of that is that, you know, you talk about a $19 million hit with OV, and I think it's 14 with Janoris, with Jackrabbit, you know? So, Pat, I don't know. I couldn't get a read of what he was thinking with that. I guess we'll find out in the next few months, Pat. I really don't know which way he's going to go, but I can't envision keeping them both.
No, I don't think both of them are going to be kept either. And if I had to take a guess, an educated guess, and not just on money, but just based on everything, I would think OV is in a little bit more a little more susceptible to being cut than Jenkins. And not again, not just because of the money. OV, if they cut him before June 1st, $11.5 million savings, $8 million dead money cap hit. I think if they cut him, he would be a post-June 1st transaction, which to me would make the most sense. They would then save $15.5 million, have $4 million dead money this year and $4 million dead money next year. You know, to me, you just can't afford to keep running up that dead money total. They're already at $9 million, and right. You've got to get Landon, you know, either franchised or transitioned or signed or something. You've got to add some more veterans there, so they can't keep, you know, throwing money down the toilet, which is why I think OV, if he is indeed cut, is going to be a post June 1st transaction. But with OV, here's the other thing, Chris. I wonder if, you know, upon further review, was he a fit for what James Betcher was trying to do? What did you think during the year? I mean, I know he was injured for most of the year, mm-hmm. and we didn't really get to see, you know, the full effect of OB, but when we did see him, I mean, especially against the run, how many times did this guy come crashing down and then he was unable to disengage and his edge mm-hmm. was left wide open?
Yeah, it happened a few times, no question about it. I don't know if he was comfortable in the system. I really don't. I mean, he never really seemed in tune, right, with Betch's defense. Mm-hmm. The last game, he had a couple of sacks against a backup, you know, Cameron Fleming, the over there left tackle. But against good tackles, OV kind of disappeared, right? There was a couple of games. Me and you sit next to each other, Patty, in the press box, and there was a couple of games we were like, you know, where's OV? You know, I mean, what is he doing out there? You know, he was like invisible. So I don't think he's coming back, Pat. I'm not sure he's felt totally comfortable in this system. You know, he wasn't healthy half the year. I understand that, but at the same time, he's the only pass rusher they have right now. You know, he's still the only pass rusher. Not that he's a 15 sack guy, but he is the only pass rusher they have. But no, Pat, I don't know if he was ever really 100% comfortable in the system, and I don't expect him back.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. I mean, when we saw him in the spring and summer,
yeah, he looked good.
He was a terror.
Yeah, he was.
We thought, oh my God, this guy's going to be an absolute monster in this system.
Yeah.
And then the ankle injury, the high ankle sprain happened, and everything seemed to come crashing to a halt. Then when he came back, you know, you could tell he wasn't right, that it took him a while to get right. And I still question if he was right physically at the end of the year. But again, you look at the basic things and where he was lining up. And I just don't know if what Betcher ultimately asked him to do was a good fit for what OB can do best.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if that was exactly a good fit. Like you said, Pat, you know, when we saw him in training camp, I mean, everybody thought he was going to have a monster season. Of course, the high ankle sprain, you know, ruined the beginning of his year. There's no question about it. Even when he returned, Pat, he wasn't 100%. I just think he actually got 100% maybe the last four or five games, Pat, you know, before he actually felt pretty good. I don't know. You know what? Can you blame the system? Maybe he wasn't that comfortable. Maybe some of the things he was asked to do. I don't know, Pat. This is what it is with OV. I thought he would have a bigger year when he got healthy. He didn't. And I don't know. It would be interesting to see if Gettleman moves on from him.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, Chris. I would be very surprised if OV is back next year. I mean, I don't even know if they're going to offer him a pay cut because, again, I look at, you know, and I'm obviously, I watch film, but I'm not as good as Dave Gettleman because I don't do it, you know, 24/7. That's not, you know, totally all my job. It's part of it. But I just question whether OV was ultimately a fit. And sometimes you just don't know until, you know, you get into things. And then also remember they changed the defense up a little bit. They ended up shifting around, you know, the guys up front, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson moved in. Once they moved Snacks out, you know, the back end of the defense was shaken up. So I just, you know, how much did that have an effect on OV? It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah, you're right. It's hard to say. You know, it really is hard to say. I guess, Pat, the only way you would really see that is if he stayed next season and he was year two into Betch's system and he had a big year. You know, then you say, okay, he fit into the system well. He got used to it and all that. That's the only way I guess you would really get that answer. And I'm not quite sure we're going to see that, Pat, year two in this system.
Not with the draft class set to be, you know, rich in pass rushers. I mean, if they can get a kid, you know, who could be there for 5, 6, 7 years at a cheaper price for 5 of those years, I think that, you know, you have to make that business decision and just, you know, it's unfortunate because, like I have always believed, you know, you're never going to get your full investment on a high-priced free agent. It just doesn't work out that way. Very rarely do guys finish out their contracts. I think the last guy to finish out their contract who was a high-priced free agent was Antrell Roll, the safety,
right,
who was worth every penny, by the way.
Right.
But, you know, look, the mere fact that they had to bring in OV and Jenkins and Damon Harrison – What was that all a result of, Chris? That was all the result of our friends Jerry Reese and Mark Ross.
The Buffoon Boys.
There it is.
The Buffoon Twins. Go ahead.
It was all the result of those guys swinging and missing on premium draft picks. You know, DeMontre Moore, Marvin Austin, you know, Prince Amukamara unfortunately didn't work out. J-Ron Hosley didn't work out at cornerback. You know, and I'm sure there's another one.
What was the kid from UCLA, the third round pick?
Yes. So, I mean, a lot of swings and misses. And when that happens, you get thrown into this vicious cycle where you have to overspend for mulligans. And guess what? Now when you have to overspend, you don't have cap space to get your own guys taken care of, specifically the guys that you want to take care of. And now you have to make decisions. And if they walk away, you say, oh, he was asking for too much. And an example that comes to mind is when they lost a few years ago tight end Martellus Bennett. Because they couldn't afford him, because they had, you know, had to do mulligans.
Patty, it's very dangerous when you have a lot of cap space with a football team. And the Jets are going to find out this year, the Browns, because what happens is if you go drunk, you know, if you go sailor drunk crazy and sign all these guys like Reese did, of course, we all know Reese and his buffoon twin there, Ross, the reason why they did this, because like you said, they swung and missed numerous times in a draft, so they overcompensated by signing these guys with huge contracts, which is great back in 2016, but now they're paying for it, right? Mm-hmm. And salary cap hell because of these tremendous contracts that Jerry Reese gave guys like, you know, Snacks and OV and Jenkins and all that. So it's a very, you have to be very careful when you go into a year like you have like 90 million in cap space and all that, because you don't want to tie up your future. The Giants are seeing that now. Now Gettleman has to, you know, he has to maneuver and all kinds of things going on just to try to get some cap relief, right? So we could, like, you know, so we could sign maybe other guys, free agents and all that. So Reese and the buffoon boy, Ross, really, really hurt this team. Besides Patty being horrific in a draft, okay, except for one or two guys, okay?
Right.
Horrific in a draft. They also screwed the Giants with these large contracts where you have a, how would you categorize OV? A pretty good, right, linebacker, I guess, right?
I would say, well, they went to the playoffs with him. Obviously, they didn't advance, right. But, you know, right. I would say he's a decent player, but not. Right. I wouldn't say he's.
But not a $19 million a year.
No, not. I mean, look, right? look at how he's been in. You know, in Miami, he always had Cam Wake on the other side. You know, the year that he did so well, he had JPP on the other side. Yep. You know, and then the you know this year he had nobody, and you know there were struggles. So.
Right, but the point being is, I think we could both agree he's a pretty good linebacker, but he's not a $19 million cap hit linebacker.
No.
Janoris Jenkins
had
a great first year as a Giant, but he's been what? He's been mediocre. I mean, he's been pretty good since, right? He had a pretty good year this year. Not all right, nothing special, right? Mm-hmm. And he's going to be $14 million against the cap next year. They're not those type of players, Pat. And now Gettleman is stuck with them, and it's tough, man. It's tough. You know, and the Giants are trying to shovel at it this year because of what Jerry Reese did 3 years ago.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Janoris Jenkins. You know, I go back and forth with him, but tell me if I'm wrong, Chris. Didn't it look at times that Jenkins was not interested in it, as interested, I should say, as he should have been, especially when they were out of it or the game was just out of control at some point? It just looked like, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, quit, because that's not the right word. He gave an effort, but not as much of an effort as you probably would have liked to have seen. I mean, or am I just seeing things?
No, I think you're on something a little bit there. He looked like a little disinterested at the end of the year. Yeah, he did. I thought, you know, at the beginning of the year, he did not play well. He said he had an injury. He just didn't like talking about it. Okay, possible. You know, last year he injured the foot and the ankle and all that. Okay. Then he started playing well, Pat. You remember in the middle of the year, he had like a 3 or 4 game stretch where he played really well, really well. And then the last few games, you know, I think the Titan game on, Pat, he kind of looked like, I hate to say not wanting to be there, but he did kind of look like maybe his head was elsewhere, right? Mm-hmm. At times, which, listen, I mean, Janoris has a reputation for being a little, a little out there at times. You know what I mean? I mean, we saw it last year. We know what happened with him last year. You know, with under McAdoo and the whole nonsense that happened last year. And, you know, at the end of this year, he just kind of looked like, I don't know, you know, the season's over. I can't wait to get back home and do my thing. I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, I kind of get that. I kind of got that just myself, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because you never know what's going on in a guy's head. But, you know, you look at what you see on the field and you just – something just wasn't right there. And I just can't put my finger on it. But
You think he's back?
I honestly don't know. I mean, people say, they can give him a pay cut. They cut him down last year. So I don't know that they'll do it 2 years in a row. I don't know if he would accept it 2 years in a row. So if they go to him and, you know, theoretically say, hey, Janoris, we want you back, but we need you to take a cut, and he says no, I could very easily see them doing what they did to Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and saying, well, you won't take a cut. We gotta let you go.
Yeah. Guess what? You're cut.
Yeah, exactly. And Gettleman, I think, didn't he say that, you know, he said defense. So I got to think, and it was unusual because it's funny. Last year at the combine, I had an agent tell me, oh, make sure you brush up on the cornerbacks because I guarantee you Gettleman's going to take one. He always takes cornerbacks in the draft, and he takes a lot of corners. And he didn't last year. And I texted that agent. I said, hey, I thought you said he was going to take them. He said, okay, this was an aberration. But he said, I guarantee you he will take corners moving forward. This year I think that person's going to be right.
Patty, on our podcast, you know, the podcast I do for the paper, you know, the Giant Insider podcast. That's exactly what I said the other day with my Jerry Foley, you know, the editor, the guy I do the podcast with. That's exactly what I said. I said, don't put it past Gettleman to draft a corner with the sixth overall pick.
Oh, you do think not, the sixth?
Patty, don't think if – I'm not sure who's coming out this dominant. I know there's a couple of good corners coming out, but Patty – this is a passing league. I'm not saying it's going to happen. All I'm saying is it would not shock me because, you know, when the Browns took Denzel Ward last year with the fourth pick, remember? Mm-hmm. People were like, what is John Dorsey doing taking Denzel Ward fourth overall and this and that? And now they turned around and said, what a great pick that was because he turned into like a shutdown corner. Mm. Patty, you need corners. If they let Jenkins go, okay, then we have who?
Yeah.
Sam Beal. Well, we don't even know what he is, Patty.
We don't know.
Don't know what's – now, I'm not saying, Patty, that I think I'm going to throw my hat into this and say, oh, look, he's going to go corner. All I'm saying, Patty, is that would it shock me if they went corner with their number one pick? No, because if Jenkins goes, Pat, we are down to Sam Beal, who we know nothing about. Okay. They need edge guy. I understand that. But like you said, Gettleman likes to draft corners, right? Mm-hmm. So you never know. I mean, you could get a corner in the second round and third round. I understand that, Patty. But if there's a dominant corner, I'm not even sure yet, Patty, if a dominant corner is coming out. I'm not even sure. I got to be honest with you. I haven't looked at all the college kids yet.
Yeah.
But defense, Pat, it's a passing league.
Yeah.
They couldn't cover anybody the last few games, Pat.
Yeah.
I mean, Dak Prescott threw for 380 yards with Amari Cooper not being a factor in the game. Mm-hmm. That's embarrassing, Pat. Embarrassing.
It sure is. It is. Definitely is. And you know, that's an interesting point, Chris, because when people – I know I haven't said – cornerback, because I figure, you know, cornerback would be a day two type of pick, but that's a good point. You know, I mean, I'm all in favor of a pass rusher because, you know, I look at how much time quarterbacks had to throw the ball. I mean, God, they could have had a four course meal with the amount of time they had back there. So that's why I'm thinking, you know, pass rush.
Rightfully so, Pat. Everybody should be thinking edge guy. All I'm saying, Pat, is that would it shock me if Gettleman went with a top flight shutdown. Well, we don't know what they are until they stop playing, but a top corner coming out because Pat, If they move on now, Pat, if they don't move on from Janoris, then no, I don't think they will. Mm-hmm. I do not think they will. Mm-hmm. If they move on from Jack Rabbit, Pat, I think Corner could be in play. That's all. I'm just telling everybody, you know, everybody that's listening, keep that in mind.
That's a very good point. And, you know, Chris, like I always tell people when they want to talk draft and do these mock drafts in January and February, I always tell people, watch what happens in free agency, because contracts, the way they are structured, the moves that they make regarding, you know, who they keep and who they send packing due to salary cap, that's all a bunch of clues that you can use to kind of gauge how they're going to go in the draft.
Yep.
And people, yep. I get it. Everybody's excited. They want to know about the draft because these are shiny new toys and everything like that. I get it. But you can really, really, if you study what a team does, and I know last year I did this. I took a look at the contracts they gave out, and I said, this is what I think they're going to do in the draft. And I think with the exception of one pick, I was pretty much spot on as far as the areas they went and, you know, the direction they were going to, you know, that they shaped the roster in. And it's just, it's right there.
Absolutely, Pat. And that's why I mentioned it, Pat. If they move on from Jackrabbit, you know, you're talking about a team now. If they don't sign guys in free agency, I'm talking about, you know, if they don't go corner in free agency and stuff like that. Oh, that's all I'm saying is that we have nobody. Zilch.
Yep.
Zilch. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, you know, we're hoping, Pat, that Sam Beal turns into a pretty, you know, they spent the three on him and all that. We're hoping Sam Beal turns into a pretty solid corner. But, Pat, as of right now, we have no idea what Sam Beal's going to be like. None.
Yeah.
You know, so listen, I remember people thought John Dorsey was out of his mind going with, Denzel Ward with the fourth pick after he took Mayfield with the first. Everybody thought he was going to go Bradley Chubb, remember? Everybody thought, he's going to go Chubb, no question. Yep. He's going to match him up with Myles Garrett, remember? And he went corner. So would it shock me if Jackrabbit's released, if Gettleman was thinking shut down corner? No, it wouldn't, Pat.
That's a really, really, really good point, Chris. Really good. And it's something that a lot of people are not thinking of. And
No, not at all.
And that's why you take the off season in segments. And you know, Chris, just in closing, anything else that, you know, that popped up from Gettleman's presser today that you just, you know, that you think is worth discussing? I mean, I think we pretty much covered a lot.
I think we pretty much covered it. Just that the way he said brutally honest with players, with Eli, I think he's basically saying that some feelings are going to get hurt in this offseason, Pat. And it might even be Eli's, Pat. It might even be Eli's, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is like, you know, he basically said the main goal last year was to change the culture of this locker room, you know, get some guys in, you know, get Sherman, get his system down, you know, get him used to the organization, all that. And now this offseason is going to be strictly talent, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And if that means hurting some feelings and releasing some guys, and that includes Patty, you know, Eli, not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's possibly in play, and that's what's going to happen. You know, when Gettleman mentioned that a few times about being brutally honest with guys, to me it said that some cuts are coming down and some feelings are going to get hurt, Patty, and some changes are happening.
Hey, what does he always say about putting on your big boy pants?
That's right, right? He says it all the time. It's a big boy league.
Exactly.
The big boy league.
Exactly. Well, Chris, before we sign off, again, tell everybody where they can find you.
You could find me at the Giant Insider Twitter, at Giant Insider, and at our podcast, me and the senior editor, Jerry Foley, the Giant Insider podcast. And you could go to giantinsider.com and subscribe to the paper.
To all you folks listening, as always, I appreciate you listening. Don't forget to tune in to Friday's show. I'm going to have Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl. We're going to talk a little bit about the Senior Bowl, the draft class, some really, really good stuff. You will not want to miss that interview. Meanwhile, it's Patricia Traynor for Chris Biziano. We're signing off. Have a good one, folks.